You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
There is fear running through the streets of the city of New Orleans. And no, this time it has nothing to do with crime. This fear is about one's property assessment as home values skyrocket in the most recent reassessment period conducted by the assessor for this city. Joining us to talk about this is Arthur Sturbkow, local real estate analyst. Arthur, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Arthur, I was looking at some of the examples that are given by some of the folks that were interviewed by the media as it relates to valuation of their property. And at first blush, it seemed to me that we had properties appreciating, if you were to say that these assessments are true, at record number rates over a 10-year period. One that when I go back and look at all of the analysts and the studies of appreciation of property over the last 10 years, I can't find numbers that really match up to these numbers. Any thought on this?
Yeah, all real estate is local. And when you generalize, you usually miss a lot of accurate information about a specific property. So it really depends on where the property is located. If it was a piece of property that had been underassessed for many, many, many years, and finally the assessor's computers caught up with it. There was once a guy who said, one day people are going to get good government and they're not going to like it. And I think what's happened in across the country, by the way, there's new mass appraisal systems that appraisers and assessors are using across the country that have become pretty good. Some of these markets, have had some unusual situations. So I always advocate for everyone. If there's a dramatic change in your assessment and you think it's wrong, I always advocate get a licensed appraiser to come out and look at it and appeal your assessment. If for some reason it happens to be accurate, there's not much you can do about it. However, there was an amendment passed by the state legislature last year because obviously they anticipated these problems, and I think it's a Band-Aid. It's not a big problem, but if someone's property value went up by more than 50%, and in many cases that's going to happen, there's a new law that basically says that the property owners would only pay 25% of the increase in the first year in the tax bill, 50% the second, 75% of the third, and then the full amount 4 years from now. So there's a phase-in period if your property assessment went up by more than 50%.
Yeah. But, I'm looking at this one particular case. Lady buys her house in 2008 for $135,000. So, in her first assessment year, the value of that house should be fairly close to what she paid for it, right?
That should be accurate. That's right.
And last year her assessment in 2018 was $167,000. And it seems to me that the problem was that over that 9-year period of time, they didn't really appropriately assess the value of her home. And from 18 to 19, her house is now assessed at $416,000.
Yeah, you have to look at each individual situation. It could be that comparables in her neighborhood were all selling around that price, but in the succeeding years, maybe some investors came in and put $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 into the neighbors' properties, raising those values up significantly. And she did not. So their higher values are adversely affecting her. And that's why an appraiser would be able to drill down and give the assessor some validation why it needs to be changed back, or at least mitigated from where he increased it to. But you're going to need facts.
But you what know, this indicates to me is that, you know, that appreciation rate from 135 to 167 over a 9-year period of time is not that much at all.
Well, when an assessor makes changes in assessments, he doesn't change just that one property. It's the surrounding areas. You know, they're not allowed to just cherry pick one property and change just that one value. If everyone else's value in that neighborhood, similar properties, goes up 17%, then hers would probably go up 17% as well. But he can't pick and choose and say, well, I'm raising you 32% and I'm raising you 9%, unless he's got some factual basis to do that. So as a general rule, they just look at, in this area, in this subdivision, property values went up 18%. You're in that subdivision, you go up 18% with it.
Well, I guess maybe what I'm trying to get to is, are we feeling the ills finally for the first time of the consolidation of all of these assessor districts, many of whom had a very different approach as to how they were going to assess property, some of whom did not reassess every 4 years, you know, pieces of property which they were required to do under the law. And it just seems that in a one-year period of time to move from 167 to 416, that's too much of a value increase in a 365-day period.
Listen, assessors are going to make mistakes. And, you know, the way to, you know, correct those mistakes is you have the right to appeal it.
Yeah.
You have the right to get facts. You can get some real estate brokers, agents out there to do some competitive market analysis for you. I always recommend a licensed appraiser. That's about as bulletproof as you can get. And those will usually stand the test, not just with the assessor, but also to the Board of Review if you need to raise it to the next level of appeal, and then to the Louisiana Tax Commission to the next level of appeal. And finally, if you're still dissatisfied, you can go to court. And none of those are inexpensive, and they're certainly time-consuming. But when you consider that it's not just the tax bill this year, that lady or that gentleman is going to be locked into those increased tax bills for the next 4 years.
4 years, correct.
So we're not just talking about this, oh, it went up $4,000 this year. We're talking about potentially $16,000. Now, in her case, if it went up that high, more than 50%, as we said, there's a phase in. Still doesn't make you feel any better because ultimately you're going to get there. But I think in her particular case, just anecdotally sitting here on the sidelines, that would be one of the first people I would recommend to go get a licensed appraiser and contest it.
And, you know, I guess, you know, they allegedly use a multiple regression analysis. And I asked the question of the assessor, why do we treat residential rental property in the same silo as residential property?
Well, because it's the law.
but it seems that, you know, that may be what's kind of tilting the wheel for owner-occupied residents, because, you know, owner-occupied residents, they don't make any money off that property. But the others do, and there's more value because you're having a more immediate return on your investment. You're not developing equity. You're developing equity and you're getting rent. You know, and in some cases with low interest rates, you're getting rent that far exceeds what the mortgage note is.
Well, you can make that case, and you can also make the case that the rental properties in general, and this is a real broad generalization, a homeowner is going to take better care of the property than possibly a landlord might or the tenants might. They're going to be more likely to replace the carpet or do some upgrades to the property where maybe a rental might not. He might not get a return on putting new carpet in this year. He might wait an extra year or two before he does it. He might patch the roof instead of putting a new roof on it. So there's, for every, you know, thing on one hand, there's an offset on the other. I'm not sure that there's a perfect solution to property tax assessments. They're always going to be imperfect. They're always going to be impacted by human error.
Wouldn't you think, though, and I'm not trying to be critical of this assessor, but I mean, of all, just assessing property in general, with today's technology, with the ability for us to zoom in on a house and do so many different things, that we ought to be able to really quantify almost on a parcel by parcel basis now.
Here's the problem, and you would be right in large measure there, Neil, but part of the problem is the assessor's hands are tied in terms they're not allowed by law to go into a property to look at it. I mean, I
understand, but I'm just talking about creating the distinction between rental residential property and property that has a homestead exemption on it, you know, where it's owner-occupied. And what, you know, we're suffering. Owner-occupieds are suffering the valuation of investment property. They're paying investment property tax rates, not really owner-occupied, because we all know that if it's creating an income stream, it has more value. That is really separate and apart from the actual real estate value, right? Because it's a business income value at that point in time.
Well, it's not a true commercial property from that standpoint. It is still.
Well, it is if I'm not living there. I mean,
it's. I understand. The law is it's considered residential if people are living in it. That would require a change in the law.
Right.
Now, philosophically, you can certainly make the case we should look at investment property different than owner-occupied, and look, that's what they're trying to do with B&Bs and things like that. If you live in it, then you ought to be exempt. You should be allowed to do it, and if you don't, then you shouldn't be able to allow to do a B&B. I understand all those things, but those are deep philosophical questions, and I'll tell you, for every two people that agree with you, you'll find two people that disagree. That's just
well, I know the people that own that property would disagree because they would have a larger burden of tax, but they're making money on that investment. You know, homeowners
and would pass that on to the renters.
And would pass that on to the renters. Exactly.
That's true. So, you know, it's I don't have the perfect answer, and I'm not sure there is one. I think that you're always going to be able to have those debates that if you're a homeowner, you know, those are rental properties. That's a fourplex over there. They should be assessed differently. However, under the law, they're considered residential, not commercial. And again, if it was going to be considered a commercial enterprise, remember the assessment on the improvements on commercial is at 15%,
right?
Not at 10% for residential. So if you wanted to move, for example, all of the multifamily units to commercial, that would be a very significant change in the tax bills on a lot of tenants.
Well, and I'm not saying you have to move it to true commercial at 15. You could move it to something else or not move it at all other than to recategorize it. And those properties that are assessed at owner-occupied are assessed against all other owner-occupieds and take them out of that regression analysis that's done that where you have these income-producing properties that, you know, that they're assessing with. So when you're looking at average sales, you're taking into consideration income properties and owner properties in the same evaluation.
Well, that's a philosophical debate that's over my head. So
I doubt that very seriously, Arthur. I doubt that very seriously.
but I certainly see those sides of it. I'm not sure that the legislature statewide require a constitutional amendment to be able to make that kind of a change. That's a deeper discussion for the legislature to consider. I'm not saying it's wrong.
You have to admit it's a unique challenge for this city, considering what was the most recent numbers, Arthur, on rental property? 67% or something of the property in the city of New Orleans are rental property?
It's the highest percent. At last time I researched, it was some years ago, the city of New Orleans had the highest percentage of rental properties of any major city in the country. And so we have a lot of doubles. We have a lot of camelback doubles. We have a lot of duplexes, triplexes, where most cities don't have that huge mix of multifamily units. A lot of them have converted. There have been some, you know, multifamily have been converted to single family. They've been single family converted to multifamily. So you've had multifamily converted to condos. So, even if you did move, as an obscure example, a fourplex, and the owner decide, you know what, I'm going to sell these things off as condos. Well, now we're back to single family again, okay? And now the units are worth more than they were as a fourplex.
Right.
And going to be taxed more than they were as a fourplex. So it would cause change in the use of some of these properties.
Well, but I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. I mean, it would seem to me that assessors need to be out in front of that. I mean,
Well, I think the assessors are pretty much going to be constrained. They may take a personal position on what needs to be done, and many times they do. But typically, you know, it's the legislators, and it may be pressure from the public and the assessors to push that upstream. But I think you're going to get some pushback from a lot of landlords. So, you know, for everyone that goes up, there's going to be somebody else sitting on the other side of that table.
It's just hard for me to imagine that the average sale price of a house moves in a year, you know, $200,000.
Let me give you an example. I mean, the assessors have been hands-on.
Arthur, let's do this. I got to get to a break, and let's do this when we come out of the break. We'll be right back. Arthur Sterbkow, local real estate analyst, talking about home assessments. Stay with us. All right, we're back with Arthur Sterbkow, local real estate analyst. Arthur, you were getting ready to give us an example.
Yeah, well, two things. One, back to the example of the homeowner versus investment property, and we glossed over that. You do get a homestead exemption from some property taxes, $75,000 if you live in the property. So I didn't
Correct.
Want that to just kind of disappear in our conversation.
Yeah, I get that.
But that was obviously an attempt to try to mitigate the impact of property taxes on homeowners compared to investment property, investment residential. But there have been other examples. I mean, I can remember one graphically where a lady was very upset that this is years ago, that her property went up $130,000, and she was furious for the assessor. And she came to me and said, well, this is ridiculous. This is crazy. My property hadn't gone up for that much. And I looked at what it was assessed for. I looked at what she bought it for. I said, have you made any improvements? She said, well, we put in a $40,000 pool. We finished up the attic. I said, well, he goes, and then when we bought, well, do you really want the assessor to know all that? Really? Is that really where you want to go with this? And it was like, you know, go get an appraisal if you're concerned about it. But so a lot of people have made additions, maybe not legal, but they certainly have done some additions, added square footage,
and it's
not being reflected in the assessor's data.
I think there's anomalies on all sides, because a lot of times,
exactly.
You know, as the tax collector, I'd have people come in and they misunderstood. I didn't put the value on their house, and they were complaining about their assessment. And my typical response was, well, you think that's way too high? Absolutely. Way, way too high. I said, I'll write you a check for that house right now for that
Absolutely.
Number. Absolutely. Oh, I'm not selling it for that number. I said, well, wait a minute. You just told me you thought it was too high. Well, you know, and so I understand it goes both ways. But it just to see this amount of movement in a, you know, in that short of period of time just seems to me to be,
there's an
high.
Underlying explanation that it needs to be explored. You're 100% correct.
Absolutely.
On its face, it doesn't make sense. People make mistakes. It could be an error. It could be an input error. Who knows? But that's why I'll advocate it again. Get a licensed appraiser to go and contest it. And,
yeah.
And
don't
that's
go.
Your safest
don't go to your back. Appeal with nothing. You got to bring something.
No, you're gonna waste a lot of time.
Absolutely, Arthur Sterbkow. Thank you again. Always enjoy our conversations.
Thank you, Don.
All right. We'll be right back. Stay with us. You know, we brought this up, and I don't know that we're ever going to get the answer, because we really don't know until we see the working papers of an assessor as to how they actually do this, how meaningful their regression analysis is, where they take in things, the consideration of the type of construction and so forth, and dealing with this valuation issue. Got a couple of texts saying, you know, y'all are talking about examples that are far greater than 18% that's reported in the paper. The 18% is the average. So you're going to have some that are less, some that are more. Keep in, you got to understand as well and consider the following. As Arthur Sterbkow said, that all property values are local. Now, when he says local, he's not talking like New Orleans citywide. I mean, it goes down to micro neighborhoods. You know, if you're in the Garden District, for example, that series of blocks there, that property is assessed at values far greater than property that may be two blocks away. The same in Lakeview. The same that you're seeing in the Bywater, in Treme, and other areas, mid-city, that have had significant increases. So it is very much localized to a very micro section of the city. So when we're talking about 18% averages, you may have some that have only that actually lost value. And the assessments went down to those that had incredible increases in value. But in the end, overall, 18%. Now, when we had the assessor on the show, Errol Williams, he said that this reassessment, he reassessed 66% of residential property and 100% of commercial. Most jurisdictions in the state do 100 and 100 in the same reassessment year. So in that year, everybody is treated exactly the same, and they're reassessed in that particular year. After this consolidation of all of the multiple districts, going from seven assessors, I think it was, to one, I for one, kind of the mindset, and I don't have any statistical data to prove this, but when I start looking at these things, that there are anomalies that come from these districts. And when you start evaluating those, it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge. And when you consider that they're only reassessed every 4 years, and in many cases, some of these properties, I'm curious as to whether or not they have gone through a reassessment once every 4 years. I think this assessor believes that he needs to do it once in a four-year period, and others believe that you have to do it once every 4 years, and it should be at the same time for all properties. That's the way I view it, because I think that's the only way that you can be fair to everyone, because valuation also has a lot to do with timing. You know, when interest rates are real low, you know, property values go up because you have more capacity to buy. They can buy a bigger home, so some areas that have different types of property to offer. So I think the only way that you get to true equity is that every piece is assessed at the same time, not two-thirds of residential. And I've been made aware of there have been other years where residential property was reassessed at a lower rate than that, not that it might have been half of the residents in the city were reassessed. You got to get to a template where I think everybody is treated the same in order for this and these anomalies to kind of be able to be in a better position to explain themselves out, because there's too many considerations and characteristics that are available out there, and I doubt very seriously whether the interest rate available is part of one of the multiple regressions that's used in valuation. So the only way that you can make it for the same for everyone from a timing perspective is that it has to be done 100% of residential, 100% commercial at the same time. Let's go to Janice in New Orleans on line one. What say you, Janice?
Yes, Newell, how you doing?
Doing great.
Now, I applied, but they said for this year you had to do it by August 1st, and my birthday is December 21st. So I applied for the age freeze. And then all this came up, and they're telling me that the house went from $126,000 to $248,000, and next year I will have to pay $3,000. Well, I went to the assessor's office. I spoke to someone. They told me that they were going to send someone else out here, you know, another like appraise person, assess person, mm-hmm. to come out and take a look at the property. And somebody else over there gave me a call, and they're doing something and working on something. I don't know exactly what they're doing. but they're online at the assessor's office. There's paperwork. It's a PDF document that my husband's gonna print out for me and everything. You need four copies of it, and to the best of my ability, I'm going to try to fill it out. I don't know what they're doing, but I may have to go because no one told me anything about an appeal. But I don't want to just sit back on my laurels. I have to cover my own behind here because moving forward in my life, I just know, as an old woman, I do not have $3,000 to shell out for the rest of my life. What happens, Newell? Really, think about this a minute. Let's say some old person had a savings. Okay, they had a little retirement fund, maybe $20,000. So now they can't use it for anything, nothing. They got to keep that locked up for the city. And then what happens when they outlive their $20,000? Do they commit suicide? What should they do, Newell, really?
Well, you know? I just think that this process needs to be more transparent. I look at some of these increases and I don't see these increases in other areas of the state. And either we're starting at a subpar basis where we weren't accurately assessing property over the years, where, you know, you might have been able to handle it as it is spread out over years. But to go in these valuations, I mean, you're almost 100% increase in the value of your property. And I've seen some as high as 300% increases in the value of their property. And when I look at the real estate studies, I don't see any particular area of the city appreciating over a four-year period at 300%. And that's the difficulty that I'm having in squaring up with all of this, that just something just doesn't sound right in what's ultimately happening here. And if short-term rentals or rental property is what's skewing it for owner-occupied in valuation, that needs to be corrected in one way or the other. And the 75,000 homestead exemption, yes, that is meant to be the equalizer, but it may be that that's not enough. I don't know. Or it simply has to be, in my view, that income-deriving properties need to be taxed at a different rate and should not – their valuations should not fall in the same pool with owner-occupied. We got to get to a break. We'll be right back talking about these assessment values skyrocketing. And, you know, when we talk about fear, it's been more about fear of hurricanes, fear of crime. It's the first I heard we fear assessments. We'll be right back. We're back. Let's go to line two. Talk to Woody. What say you, Woody?
Yeah, Jewel.
Yeah.
Glad that you had on the radio just now that was talking about the property tax.
Yep.
You know, you asked him. You came up with some good advice or good questions, and he boogied around them every time he could get a chance. And when he couldn't, and you put him down on the floor, he said that was above him. He don't know nothing about. And you politely told him, I really think it is, right?
No, well, I mean, you got to understand where he's coming from. He doesn't have access. I was the tax collector at one time, so I was privy to information that I understood how these assessments came out. I looked at the assessed valuation roll all the time. We would do trend analyses for purposes of our budget. So, you know, I have a little bit more information available to me as to how some of this works. He is an expert in real estate valuation across the market. And what he's not familiar with is a multiple regression analysis that's used by the assessor and what characteristics they use in that regression. In order to draw out the distinctions between a brand new piece over there that's valued at this and a 40-year piece over here that's valued at you know, Y. So those are the things that are the kind of the changes. But what I was trying to get to is I just didn't see valuation of property appreciating at the same level over that four-year period that I see with these assessments. And that's what is kind of driving me. I just got a text where somebody said that his land value went from $79,000 to $254,000.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot. That's, you know, and I sent back a text. Have any lots sold in your neighborhood for $279,000? You know, and I guess that's going to be the ultimate question.
Well, I, personally, they take, you have to pay up front, even if you appeal. You have to pay up front or you, it's a penalty. Now, when you pay up front and you go through the judicial system or whatever you want to call it, and they're wrong or that your appraisal comes out and helps you out and they got to refund you some money, they don't refund the interest on the money that they keep, do they?
I don't know the answer to that question.
No, they don't.
They probably don't, but I don't know the answer.
Well, they refund the money that they owe you, and the money that they kept all that duration of time that they drew interest on, we don't see nothing like that. But
yeah,
that's neither here nor there. The problem is they got to know if a place is a rental property or if a place is a homeowner's.
Yeah, I just think that if we're going to create valuation tables, that we need to be valuating properties of like kind. And an income-producing property, to me, is not of like kind. Because no. you can put an income approach on that property in the development of the assessed value of it. There's any number of approaches, the same thing that they do on commercial property. It's just, you know, I know a lot of people that own duplexes, they don't want it. They don't want that. They don't want increased taxes on their duplexes. But it's not the same as owner-occupied. And, you know, the homestead exemption is not to create the equality between those two types of property. The homestead exemption was there to beat back the inflationary pressures of in an owner-occupied home of increased value. And that's why it was there, that there was a preferential treatment given to owner-occupied places. And the preferred treatment that they gave on rental is that you pay at the same tax rate as if you owner-occupied it, which is passed on to the tenants in most cases. You know, so I get it, but I say evaluate all of those rental units in one bucket and then evaluate all of the owner-occupied, because I know that those rental units have more value because they're generating income.
Yeah, but what they rely on is they tell you they don't know which one's a rental property and which one's home.
And that's the point I was making, is I think it's incumbent upon the assessor to go find out. And I don't think that's too much to ask for. And I think it would be worth every nickel of what we do, and to set up our systems here. When you're doing anything, whether that be getting utilities, this, that, or that property description of being rental property follows it everywhere, so that is that we know exactly the status of that property. Woody, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back. We're back. We've been talking about this reported fear of assessments here, and a lot of people are upset, skyrocketing home values, how they're going to deal with it. I think we're going to see a record number of appeals. And my best suggestion to you is don't go empty-handed and don't start off your opening statement with, I feel. Because what you feel is of no moment. You have to have data. You have to have empirical data to support whatever proposition that you're going to put forth in order to create some consideration for them to reduce your assessment. It's going to have to be a list of differentials. It's going to have to be things that are going to prove that the property is not valued at what the assessed value is and for what reason. Pictures speak 1,000 words. It's always good to have pictures. And it's always good to have a third-party assessment or appraiser come in using realistic valuation tables that they use. And those are good to have, too. I think some people, when they get that appraisal, they're going to be surprised, and their house is going to come back being appraised more than what the assessed value is. And if that's the case, you're getting a deal. And you probably don't want to appeal it, because you certainly don't want to present that evidence, at that hearing. And, you know, that's why I've had a lot of people visit over the years talking about it and knowing the neighborhood, knowing, you know, what's going on in that neighborhood, knowing that they may have been in that neighborhood for 50 years. And they know the value, and they come in and say, oh, the assessment's too high. I need it to be reduced. And, you know, when you ask a couple, you sure it's too high, way too high. It's not worth that. Nah, it's not worth that. You know, it's worth a lot less. I said, well, I'll pay you what the assessed value is. Oh, well, no, I can't sell it to you for that. Well, wait a minute. You just said it wasn't worth the assessed value. You should want to take the money at that number. Doesn't always work out that way. All right. In the next hour, we're going to be talking about last night's Democratic debate. This will be the last time that you see 20 candidates. The numbers get called down as it relates to any number of criteria and conditions as put forth by the Democratic Committee. The next set of debates, September in Houston. There will be fewer in number. Will the attacks rise? They went at it pretty hard last night, and a lot of the Democrat Party operatives were not very happy about that. In fact, some of the candidates complained about it, and then on Twitter, while during the debate, and then turn around and start attacking one of the candidates 2 minutes later. Go figure that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.